Great is the Lord, and greatly to be praised. I trust that you've been praising him this morning already and have found God precious to you, blessed by the Sunday school hour and also the devotional for the Sunday school hour in the reality, again helping us understand the fact, the reality, and the truth of two ways. You know, God understood, perhaps, that we as human beings are simple people and we need to have a limited number of choices, and so he gave us two, the broad road and the narrow road. It's good for us to have and to be directed in that way. I was blessed by the Sunday school hour. Yes, the heart of love, I think, is key. In both giving compliments and criticism. And if we, sometimes it's true that maybe we do need to give criticism, but let's remember that the criticism needs to keep it truthful. Be very careful that the criticism you offer is actually true. Don't just try to add in all kinds of, well, offenses that I felt, that I experienced. Keep it true. Cause the least amount of pain necessary. It's painful any way it comes. It can be painful. So create the least amount necessary. And be sure it comes from a heart of love. And the most healing criticism I have received in my own life was modeled on this. Yes, I have received criticism. I've received some that maybe wasn't lining up with this. But a brother, a fellow minister, mentor in my life needed to bring a bit of correction to me once upon a time. And I found it healing rather than hurtful. And I consider him as a dear brother today that he was willing to speak into my life in the way that he did. And it was for my good. So if we can keep our criticisms like that, I think it can actually be beneficial and helpful in our church, in our church life. And it can actually build security too. Both we need, you know, we have a battery in our car. You have the positive and the negative. You take the negative off and your car is not going to start. And I have wondered sometimes, why has God done that in life? It seems so much of life has both the negative and the positive, and that is something that puzzles me sometimes as I consider life and look at that. If you think, you can even do that with love, so we're supposed to love each other. Well, why is love so meaningful? Well, the opposite is also true. That could also be a possibility, and so I want to pursue love and the positive good things in life, and not that, and yet they're both seemingly can be evident. I enjoyed the meetings here. I almost actually regret that they're coming to an end this evening. Enjoyed the interaction and discussions that we've had after services. And I would just comment a bit on a comment I made about the Bible leaning more towards a socialistic perspective than a free market enterprise one. I don't want to be, that is a comment taken from another sermon I brought, and so I don't have time to develop that whole thought or to give all the, I wasn't saying that, but I was saying this. And I hope you can chew through that one. I'm not making a political statement by that. Please understand it that way. Some of that was colored by a sermon, and I forget the brother's name, and I forget the message title, but I do know it was from given in one of your churches here in Pennsylvania. And the title, the title or the subject matter had to do with, I think maybe the title was Responding to the Threat of Socialism. I think may have been the title of it. That message actually colored the message I brought. And I do think in the comment there is my relationship with my brother in the church and in the community where I am should be tilted towards a readiness to help and open my the gifts God has given me should be open and ready to be shared with others. And I think that is what I would like us to think about, because I see threats on both sides, and I have also it is interesting to me to have lived in Romania, lived here in interaction with my brother in Haiti, and to observe we as Christian people really are collared by the political, economic systems we live in, and they actually do end up somehow forming, much as we would like to say they don't, they do end up forming the way we think and relate. So those are simply, and some of the threats that come in there because of our preaching against socialism and so the threats there, maybe we tend to forget the threats on the other side. And so there are threats on both sides, and the challenge is balance. Coming to the message this morning, we're going to go to Genesis chapter 2. You've had a message yesterday. Brother Curtis, I'm sure, blessed many of you with a message on the wedding, on relationships and marriage. We're going to look at marriage here this morning also. This is the first in a series of three that I had brought. And I introduced the message with this question. The title is Of Nuclear Importance, and the introductory question was this, and I'll let you chew on this question until further down through the message. So what's the common thread that ties all of these together? The Proud Boys, Antifa, BLM, Jeffrey Epstein, and Kyle Rittenhouse. What ties them all together? And I hope you're thinking about that. There's another one that you might play into all of that, and I don't have time for commentary on this. What has given rise to the great gender dysphoria, the sad feeling of being born a boy or girl, and gender dysmorphia, the perceived structural abnormality in people's body? What has given rise to that? And so back to the Of Nuclear Importance and Family Structure. Genesis 2, verse 21. He says here, God says, and the Lord God caused a deep sleep to fall upon Adam, and he slept. And he took one of his ribs and closed up the flesh instead thereof. And the rib which the Lord God had taken out of man made he a woman, and brought her unto the man. And Adam said, this is now bone of my bones and flesh of my flesh. She shall be called woman, because she was taken out of man. Therefore shall a man leave his father and his mother, and shall cleave unto his wife, and they shall be one flesh. And they were both naked, the man and his wife, and were not ashamed. Notice also chapter 4, verses 1 and 2. And Adam knew Eve, his wife, and she conceived and bare Cain, and said, I have gotten a man from the Lord. And she again bare his brother Abel, and she again bare his brother Abel, and Abel was a keeper of sheep, but Cain was a tiller of the ground. God created the family, and it has not yet been improved upon. God gave us a gift in family. Yes, sometimes I think both family can bring the warmest, most fuzzy, cozy, good, heavenly feelings and thoughts and anticipations to our heart, and it should. That is the way God intended it. The devil likes to take anything God makes and twist it to his own purpose, and can really end up making a hell out of it. And I hope that all of you here have experienced the positive side of that, not the negative side of that. But God has, he really has, created the family to be that structure that we need in our life. It is the most elemental, fundamental, basic need we have in our lives. Genesis 2, verse 18. We have another verse playing into that. And God said, it is not good that the man should be alone. I will make him an help meet for him. And then we could read Genesis 3, 16 to 20 there as well. Now, often we see God's judgment in that, and God saying, you're supposed to do this, and you're supposed to do that, and all of these things. There's another lesson we can draw from that, and that is simply this, that God is helping us, and in some ways, he is fleshing out the structure that he is putting in place and the way he is intending family and our relationships to work and to play together. And when we deviate from this, we really do have a very destructive experience in our life. And true, we live here on this earth, and so we probably have not, and not any of us have come from a perfect home. We're not in heaven yet, and I'm not justifying the sad, bad things that happen in our homes sometimes. I'm just saying that's reality, and we need to strive to go beyond that. And when we see failure, we need to say, you know, that wasn't perfect or what God intended. I must repent, I must change, and I must pursue the better. I must change for the good. And that is the wonderful thing, that for the Christian, the path to the cross needs to be a well-worn one that we go back to again and again in our lives and in our growth with Jesus. And that's the wonderful thing with our Christian life, is if I have failed, it's never the end with Jesus. There's always hope and chance for a new beginning. And he is interested and always gives us those. So God has selected the structure of our families. He has ordained the structure that is to be there. Much as society would like to change that, and much as Christian people have endeavored to change that sometimes, they have not improved on it, they have only messed it up. And we need to learn to bring ourselves into submission to God and accept his direction and his structure in our families. Think about it even. Family is the vehicle through which God brought salvation. He brought salvation through a family, and it is the best way to, I think it is one of the things that we're going to start running up against and we should pay attention to in our society and culture, is if you don't have a strong family structure in place in society, there are certain aspects of the salvation message that might become blurry or become opaque. Less easily discerned and understood in society. It might be more like a through a glass darkly. So we should be aware of that. Salvation came through a family, and it was the vehicle through which salvation was interpreted to us. This structure, God's intent is to provide security for all those in a family. Not just for my wife, not just for the children, but for me too, as dad. We all need to find security in that home. And if it's not providing for that, then something is wrong. And we need to start looking and trying to identify what's wrong there. Why am I not finding the security in my home that I should? You know, that's one of the sad things that's happening in this world today. People don't find security anymore. They aren't secure. You know, there's a variety of things that play into that. It might be job security, economic security, a variety of other things. But home, once that disintegrates, they have lost a lots and lots of security and stability. One of the most basic things man needs, not just man, I'm speaking mankind needs, is security. And obviously that starts with Jesus. Jeremiah 35, verse 6. We're going to read about the Rechabites here. And another thing that is of nuclear importance and helps us to understand what another ingredient is in the family. And it's one thing that is sometimes one of the things that we cringe about when bad things happen in the family. Sometimes we start saying, well, it hits our gag reflex, okay? And I think maybe we'll get to that in just a little bit. If we don't, I think you understand gag reflex. We say, yuck, I don't want that, and we flee from it. So Jeremiah 35, verses 6 to 10. But they said, speaking of the Rechabites, we will drink no wine, for Jonadab, the son of Rechab, our father, commanded us, saying, ye shall drink no wine, neither ye nor your sons forever, neither shall ye build house, nor sow seed, nor plant vineyard, nor have any. But all your days ye shall dwell in tents, that ye may live in many days in the land where ye be strangers. Thus have we obeyed the voice of Jonadab, the son of Rechab, our father, in all that he hath charged us, to drink no wine all our days, we, our wives, our sons, nor our daughters, nor to build houses for us to dwell in. Neither have we vineyard, nor field, nor seed, but we have dwelt in tents, and have obeyed and done according to all that Jonadab our father commanded us. Now, we're not necessarily going to talk about obedience here, though that's a good lesson we can draw from this. We're not going to talk about not being intoxicated with wine. That could be a lesson as well, or about being a nomad and, you know, the advantages of that. That could be a lesson as well. But they were saying, this is Jonadab. We are the descendants of Jonadab, the son of Rechab. Identity is one thing the family structure gives. In giving security, it is one of the things that a family gives by virtue of, first of all, of being family, and by necessity, it is something families need. Now, what I was saying about the gag reflex, when the bad things happen, sometimes we say, I don't want to identify with that. That might be the case, that I don't want to. Especially if there's sin, then I should not want to identify with that. And maybe that's why God has made it that way. Sin should not be an identifier for me. But if it's just, you know, personal preference, if it's because we drive this kind of vehicle instead of that kind of vehicle, if it's because we eat different food than all the rest. Now think about Jonadab, the son of Rechab, and his descendants. They were quite identifiable. The people in Jerusalem could look out their window and say, oh, there they go again. They got a couple of maybe camels in the tent there, and I wonder where they're moving to next. They're the Rechabites. Do you think they sometimes sneered at them sometimes? What do you think the people in Jerusalem were saying? Oh, you know, they're not much defense out there on the plains. Yeah, sure enough. Yeah, they want security too. Just see, I told you. War comes and now they're moving in here. You know, you think all the people appreciated the extra water they had to share with them? Maybe the extra food they had to share? You know, this was a time of war. Was that a real warm, fuzzy feeling to the Rechabites living next door? Identity. And in the family structure here, one thing when you identify with something, you make a personal investment. Notice they invested in this vision personally. They could have said once they got older, so what about the tents? You know, wine, I'm not going to get intoxicated. Let's build a house here and have a vineyard and, you know, we'll sell the tent and build a house. They could have done that, but they made personal investment, personal commitment, personal identity. You know, these are all things we find in that structure, and they really are things we need for our lives, especially young children growing up. They need that. They really do. It's formative and directive for the rest of life. Dads, where do you find your personal identity? Are you a business owner first? Something for us to think about. Or am I a dad first? My father in the home first? Or is that second? A challenge for me too. Am I an athlete or an educator? Yeah, I'm a good school teacher. That's a good thing to do. But where am I? Where's my first identity? A father, you know? If I'm a married man, that should be my first identity. I'm a husband and a father. Jesus, then husband and father. Those are first things. And in underneath being a husband and father is the thing of providing, understand that. But that can't take precedence over the others. That's only part of my function of being a father, and we need to keep those things in proper order. Personal meaning. Actually, for me, myself, personally, I find meaning in the investment I make in my family. It roots me in who I am, and it directs my life. I don't have to worry about lots of other things in life because it's, in some ways, predetermined by the structure God has put in place and the way he has directed it. You know, we say, well, these are obvious to me. Yes, we need to build these stronger because we can look around us and see how many sad things are just broken in our society, and that we should come to value the gifts we have and treasure them more and more, and be willing to reach out and also, you know, help others who might not have this. Personal fulfillment comes from within identity. I can make a personal contribution within the home, and each part needs to contribute. It's not okay to freeload at home. I don't think so. Freeloading is not okay at home. We all make a personal contribution. We all eat at the same table, don't we? So it's okay if everybody helps wash the dishes now and then, or makes a schedule, or, you know, something. Personal connection to others. And this is something that we'll talk about hopefully a bit later, but that personal connection. You will note that in Genesis 46, verse 27, when the whole family of Jacob moved into Egypt, 70 people went along. Now think about it, if you were a young person in that caravan, how many people could you observe living life around you? Well, 69 others. How many lessons could you learn? Well, you could learn how to do some things. The comment I heard from a brother, you can learn something from everybody. You can either learn how to do it or how not to do it. And so those are the things you're observing around you in that caravan moving, okay? So all that connection, that interconnectedness, keeps me from floating by myself in society and bouncing around and then not knowing where I am. And I also find personal care within the family. When I have a broken something, I have all these people who are interested in, oh, I'm so sorry, that really must hurt, you know. We had an accident in church here not long ago. It could have been really, really bad, a side-by-side accident. But the whole family was like right there. Once they heard about the accident, they just all left. Sunday afternoon was totally interrupted and everything. They showed up at the scene of the accident because my sons were hurt. I ended up in the hospital, long story with that. But they had care, you see. When you're by yourself, you have, what do you have? Your insurance or whatever else the case might be. It can be very lonely. Deuteronomy 6, verses 4 to 7. We will learn about who God is, what God expects, and how to relate to others within family. It has been that way with God's people throughout history. And there in Deuteronomy chapter 6, it talks about talking about the commandments of the Lord when we sit down and rise up and all of these different things that we're doing in the normal activity of life. We are learning within family what God intends. And it's actually a good place how to learn to relate to others between male and female. It should be a good, healthy way to learn about that. You know, boys should learn to respect their mom and their sisters, sure, and vice versa. Closed doors are meant to, you know, you knock before you go in, and all the other variety of things that are just simple, basic helps in maintaining our own personal respect and purity among ourselves. Strength. God has provided for that. Psalm 127. Let's go there. Psalm 127, verses 3 to 5. We're going to read here that says, "Lo, children are an heritage of the Lord, and the fruit of the womb is his reward. As arrows are in the hands of a mighty man, so are children of the youth. Happy is the man that hath his quiver full of them. They shall not be ashamed, but they shall speak with the enemies in the gate. Yes, God provides strength in the family. Now, what do you think that means, that word strength there? What kind of strength is this family going to have? Well, they're not easily intimidated, obviously, because they're speaking with some enemies. You have an enemy show up at your house door, let's just suppose this afternoon. You have an enemy. You want somebody who's not easily intimidated. We say not to be non-resistant, sure, but that doesn't mean I have to be intimidated. You know? Okay, what's he meaning here? Well, okay. Be interesting to hear your thoughts. But I think in some ways he's saying, I am secure in who I am. And I think a normal, healthy family relationship can help develop that within us. So I'm okay with being Owen. I hope Owen is. And a shock at that. Really? Yes. Because Mom and Dad love me. It was interesting to me over a lunch or supper last evening there at the Leister family. I was like, this reminds me of my house. I got a lot of boys here. Yeah, the flavor's similar, you know, the back and forth between boys. I'm okay with that. That's nice. Thank you for the good evening. And we were just there last evening. The rest of you, thank you as well. But it was just unique to me to see that. And we're okay with that. Are you okay with who you are? Are you fine with that? Now, we don't often sit down and, well, I have an outline that I follow on plan A, B, C, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, as moms and dads, and how do I accomplish this? Well, one of the surest ways to do it is just love each other. Just plain that, you know, that's something you can serve at every meal, just love each other. First course, second course, and dessert, just love each other. And some of this will actually grow naturally. It starts there. Yeah, now there are things we need to pay attention to, obviously, and we talk about them in our sermons sometimes, but this ingredient, love, is really the fountainhead from which it must spring. Strength, because I'm fulfilled in who I am. Since I have learned to contribute, there's fulfillment in that, and I'm secure in that. And I'm confident in who I am because I see that I can make a good contribution. And I'm secure in that. I'm confident in that. And these are things that family gives us. These are things that family gives us. Identity. I decided I would choose. Here's a question you might ask yourself. So what was Jonadab's vision for his children? I'll let you chew on that in light of the Sunday school. So the Shrock name, where does that come from? Is that a good name or a bad name? We won't discuss that long, but Shrock. Shrage was the original name, idea. It could either mean sort of going across the corner diagonally instead of going down here and here. You can go across corner. That's one idea. The other thing, it could be Schrank, which is German, obviously, has the idea of making like a cabinet, you know, like a cabinet builders and, you know, furniture. And so we have Schrock's cabinet in Holmes County, you know, okay? So identity. Okay. Do you ever think about that, your last names too? You say, well, perhaps I'm a bit abstract, I don't know. Amstutz is another interesting one, German. Comes from the Amstutz, at the precipice. So one of the original Amstutzes was like living right before the hill fell off, you know. There's another one, Schwarzentruber. Schwarz am Trube, to do with the black grapes. Now we'll cease there, but there's others, you know, that you can go into. Miller, Mueller, these kinds of things. You know, identity, yes. It roots us somewhere. So lest I, perhaps we'll go through a few more points here and then come back to the Proud Boys and Antifa. So family benefits, what are some actual and real benefits you receive and what are tangible things we have in family? Well, one of the things is family. The story of salvation just communicates naturally. You have Joseph, you have Mary, you have a baby. Now, there are things in that. We have the virgin birth, I understand that. But you have all of that together right there. You have the whole genealogy that Jesus could trace himself back. He says, this is my identity. These are my roots. This is my connection. This is where I am. And Jesus bought into that. He could have said, this is a whole bunch of disgusting sinners that I don't want to identify with at all. I mean, Rahab in my lineage, please no. Well, let's cover that up. And then Jesus says, no, I came to save those. And I'm identifying with them. And he actually met with the publicans and sinners. And so all of these things communicate within the story of salvation, actually. Children will do better at school in a family structure. There's greater emotional stability in a family. Children are more stable emotionally. They've actually discovered they're more stable emotionally, too, if they know a little bit about their history and a little bit of the story of their family. Stability comes in there. I'm trying to give and hold up the high. This is what we're trying to go for. They've discovered also that children will find greater emotional stability. Now, this one can actually be ouchy, and I don't know quite what to do with it myself, except this is what they've discovered, and is that even if there's conflict between parents and fighting and bickering, if the two of them stay together, the children will actually end up doing better than if they separate. And it has to do with the rooting and the identity. Now, there's a whole kinds of other package that comes with that, but they have discovered that. Yes, we'll try to not comment on that. One brother came to me afterwards, any other male figure than the biological father, they're also discovering is less optimal than biological dad. Now, some of that can be mitigated, especially if dad dies. And there's a funeral, and mom remarries. The children can bond to dad. That God has provided for that. But for dad to just walk off, I have a good friend. I consider him a Christian friend, dear friend of mine. He's the youngest in a family, I forget of how many. There's one, two, three that I know of for sure, four, somewhere in there. All the children are from different dads. They don't know where the dads. The last two might be from the same one, though. But dad just, he sort of disappeared. And dad's disappeared, and there's half, and he struggles. But I love the brother dearly. And he's done something good with his life. He hasn't just disappeared into poor me. But he still, there's some things that he just struggles with himself emotionally with stuff. Another brother I would share with too, that his father abandoned him when he was 6, and these are people I know of personally. He's doing well, he got married, and him and his wife, we would say, is a grand mix for really bad marriage problems. Well, her mom was a Christian, her dad was a drunk. I was at my mother's funeral, and dad showed up drunk. He was drunk at mom's funeral, okay? And these two get together, and they get married. Young man, dad abandoned him at 6 months old, mom raised him, her dad's a drunk, how are you going to have good things happening here? Well, he told me once, well, we wanted a good marriage. We were serious about it. We did not want to, so they bought a whole bunch of books. I saw their bookshelf, a bunch of books, marriage help, and this and this and this and this. They're a couple that reads and reads and reads and reads a lot. And they get into the Bible and they read, they study, they have made it part of themselves, and they've read these marriage help books and all this, and because they don't want to repeat. And I think they're doing quite well, actually, to tell you the truth. I admire them, personal friend, a man who has helped me too. One day he told me, yeah, all these books are good, but we finally discovered that if we just simply read the Bible and actually take it for what it means, for what it says, and we actually just go do it, that's what we just have to do. Because this is where we've, you know, we could have saved ourselves a bunch of money. So those are two, there are other testimonies I could get from the interactions I've had with life and in mission work and different stuff, that it is true. There are challenges and difficult things we do face because of what has happened in our life, but we don't have to be bound by it. We can take the Bible. Yes, my hat is off, if you want, I would say it that way, to those who I cannot enter into that struggle. I can just see their commitment. I can see their dedication. And I am going to take the Bible serious. And in spite of my hindrances, I will do what the Bible says. And it has given me a deep appreciation for people with that commitment, because I have seen firsthand the effort it takes. So dads, be there for children. Criminality is greatly reduced when the home is together, because they learn that what you sow, you reap. Dad says no, and mom says no, and when you do it, there are consequences. It's a teaching right there. Men actually earn more married than they do unmarried. They've noticed that. They've studied that economics goes up. Single-parent homes are a drain on the economy. Now, that's a whole other discussion we can talk about, but we'll leave that. Men live longer married than they do unmarried. Maybe it's because the wife says, now go to the doctor and get this checked out. Another one is the stress is reduced, yes. And the structure, we understand the story of salvation. Life is cared for. It's a greater learning base, and we have large families give greater social capital. And I used that term earlier, would define it just a bit for you. Social capital simply means it's a positive product of interaction between people. The outcome might be tangible or intangible. So you young men who are in a mechanic shop over here at the Martins or wherever else it might be, dad worked in a mechanic shop all his life, and you can learn. You say, well, I'm not learning about all the other things. Maybe not. But the capital you can harvest from your dad's brain is greater than my boys will harvest from my brain when it comes to mechanics. Okay? That's what we're talking about. And it could include favors. That's why I think we should be willing to help each other without getting paid for it. Yeah. It's part of Christian living. It's a product of humor. You also get new ideas from interacting with each other. That's why I think all the how-to stuff on YouTube might be okay, but it's circumventing this social capital thing that we don't get from interacting with each other anymore. You get new innovative ideas, and you actually have future opportunities. So I'm connected with you, Brother David, and he over there, he starts to do something, and oh, well, maybe I could help him out, or he could help me out. And so, you know, ever wonder, it actually in America here can become an economic powerhouse. It really can. And if you take this whole idea over, even as a Christian, into a socialistic country, and we're working with each other this way, some of the crushing influences of it might actually be less for you there when I have this Christian community I can reach out to and we help each other. It's actually a benefit in whichever society you live in. And that is what has happened in America today. Social capital is going down because families are getting smaller. One of the greatest studies for scientists who want to be successful today is loneliness studies. Over COVID, it really came out because older people in nursing homes were lonely. And one of the direct contributing factors to that was smaller families, fewer children, who, if you don't have them, they won't come to see you. I'm sorry. It's just, it won't happen. You can dream about Sally and Susie all day long, but if they were never born, sorry. That's just reality, okay? Which directly translates into those oncoming generation having fewer aunts and uncles they can learn from. It's sad. It's really sad. And maybe it also gives a strong cultural structure for family, but also for society. I'll give you just a bit of something to chew on. Is there a reason that all the Americans are concerned about the immigrants coming in? It's happening in Western Europe, too. Lots of Muslims moving in. Where's their emphasis? Strong family. Their culture is strong. America's is not. All you have to do is read your history books. Strong cultures have always taken over the weak ones. And I'm not saying always militarily, but it has always happened. Is that why the Jews are still around today? Traditional Jewish society expected if you are able and capable, we teach if God leads. Okay, so please figure that into this whole thing. Okay, please. But they expect that if you're able and capable, you are obligated to marry and start a family. They view it as a little bit as a kingdom. It's your own little private kingdom. And if you can't set that up and regulate it, structure it, make it produce good things, then what right do you have to speak into the larger community? And I think it's one of the keys to why they're still around today. They have put the emphasis in the right place. Now, maybe without a life of Christ, you know, there might be some there with some of them, but I think you're big enough to think through those things. The evidence and common denominator of the people, what's the evidence and common denominator of all the people at the beginning? No family. All of them. Including Kyle Rittenhouse. Oh, he is the good young American, you know. He's searching for something. What if Dad would have been home and taken care of him? That's a common denominator in them all. That's why BLM and Antifa and all these are so virulent groups, is because they're finding identity. That's why identity politics today is so explosive. Because family, and until society gets this right, that it starts at home with mom and dad, it's not going away. It's just not going away. So let us as Christian people, let us value, please, brethren, sisters, love each other and your families. It's a gift not only to yourself, it's a gift to the church, and it's a gift to society. Even the church in its structure is likened to the family, Ephesians 5. You know, look at that whole discussion about the church, the husband and wife. Look at the imperative of interdependence is reinforced in 1 Corinthians 12. The whole body's interdependence reinforces that need. The contribution of each member, 1 Corinthians 12 and Ephesians 4, 11 to 16, is recognized. You know, and for a healthy church, that's what we need. We need each other, the interdependence, and we need to recognize each brother. Thank you for the Sunday school devotions. Thank you for being Sunday school superintendent. Thank you for being a teacher. Thank you for what you do with the quilting committee and all of those things. Thank you for Sunday lunch this afternoon. You know, everybody's contributing. That provides for strong society and culture. Truly, the family is nuclear. It is nuclear. You can simply look at what's happening in society, and it would, in some ways, could liken a nuclear explosion. All the destruction in lives. Almost power for unlimited destruction once it starts going south. But almost power for unlimited good when it stays together. If you like to study some of those things, look at nuclear fission and fusion, and you might study Chernobyl, which happened when I was in first grade at school. Chernobyl in Ukraine. So what's your family like here this morning? If anyone here cares to study or to read, this is outside. You have to realize if you do this, it's from the secular standpoint. But J.D. Unwin, and I had preached a message in which I talked about, maybe I'll take just a bit of time here for you to think about, because I think it's important that we think about this. Because of the message society is sending us in our homes, and it can actually be very, and has become very, very destructive in society. Unwin just simply looked at what happens in a society when they go from believing God and having a clear expectation of moral purity before and during marriage. In other words, a monogamous relationship with no fornication beforehand. Those societies have always contributed to the highest good of society. And there are only three societies throughout history who have managed to maintain it for three generations or longer. Those were the Greeks, the Romans, and the British. All other societies throughout history have started messing with that and toying with that. And within three generations, they were overtaken by another culture. The U.S. started this journey. We're not at the end yet, but we started it. So is marriage, biblical perspectives on the marriage relationships, I'll give you a few points. We need to have a help meet, someone like and equal to us. We should have mutual development in the home. There should be mutual love and submission in the home. There needs to be a one flesh in the home. There needs to be mutual responsibilities in the home. The results of your marriage should be completion, development, satisfaction, maturity, and growth. Here's the question I have for you. Is marriage for pleasure? No. Yes. Now, which way is it? I can't flesh it all out because this was part of a sermon. Proverbs 5, Ecclesiastes 9, and Proverbs 19 imply pleasure, but you need to be asking what type of pleasure and what is meant by pleasure. I think those are key questions for you to ask. Because we need to be careful or we'll give the world's answers. Is the pleasure only physical? Marital bliss and satisfaction are predicated on responsibility, accountability, and integrity, and purity. Pleasure is simply the fruit, one fruit that is the result of a whole lot of other things first. And it's only one fruit that we eat sometimes. It's not something we eat all the time. The world is saying pleasure is first, middle, last, end of story. And if it's not fulfilling that, I'm out of here. And we also need to remember to ask this question. So are those who are not married somehow missing out on a completely full and satisfied life if marital bliss is the ultimate? Well, I would say no, they are not missing out on a completely full, satisfied life. But how can that be the case if we're giving the world's answers? You see, they also have pleasures. How about the joy of going to Greece, brother, and fulfilling your life and pouring it in there and coming home with some gifts from a friend? Oh, that's fulfilling. And that's pleasure. And that's satisfying. So maybe that's a question your brethren, fellow ministering brethren, can chew on and give a sermon on sometime. But I think we need to give good answers to that question, because the world's giving us all kinds of bad ones. All kinds of bad ones. So this morning, fathers, mothers, may your homes truly be nuclear in a good way. Let's bow our heads for a word of prayer.